everyone, and welcome to the All It Takes a Goal podcast, the best place in the entire world, including all of Canada, to learn how to build new thoughts, new actions, and new results. I'm your host, John Acuff, and today we're talking about summer school. That's right. We're in a brand new series called Summer School, where we talk about the things you've asked us to talk about. So what does that mean? Well, it means that every year, there's a couple ideas that people ask me about consistently. They ask me about writing a book. They ask me about staying in shape. They ask me about running a business. They ask me about speaking. And so we thought it'd be fun during the summer when you're out on the lake or on a river. I don't know why I keep referencing bodies of water that I think you guys are constantly going to during the summer months. But that during the summer, it's a chance for you to connect with something that you might be really, really curious about. And so today's is about running a business. I've run my own business. This is my 10th year. I started my business in the fall of 2013, and 10 years later, I've really enjoyed it and I've learned a bunch. And so today we're going to talk about that. But before we do, let's hear a quick word from the sponsor of today's episode. Are you living up to your full potential? Dr. Mike Peasley and I asked over 3,000 people this question, and the research was wild. Here's what we found. 50% of people reported that 50% of their full potential is untapped. That means half of us are walking around with half lives. But what if you could have a fulfilling career? What if you could enjoy a thriving marriage and strong friendships? What if you could be in the greatest shape of your life? The good news is you can. In my new book, All It Takes Is a Goal, you'll learn how to escape the comfort zone, avoid the chaos zone, and live in the potential zone. Plus, for a limited time, when you order by September 12th, you'll get amazing bonuses like the entire audiobook read by me. That's right, you get the entire audiobook for free. You also get a signed book plate and an exclusive download of my Dream Plan Do review poster. Order your copy anywhere books are sold, and then claim your bonuses at atgbook.com. That's atgbook.com. All right. I'm excited to jump into some content, and I'm really excited because my buddy GN is here to join us. You've heard me brag on this guy over and over and over again. He's from Brazil, has an amazing Move to America story, is one of the most encouraging people you'll ever meet. He's kind of the cruise director of this online community we have, called the Guaranteed Goals Community. And he meets with folks on follow-up, encouraging them on their goals. And so I thought it'd be fun to have him sit in with me for a few of these episodes, the summer school episodes. So ladies and gentlemen, once again, please join me in welcoming GN back to the podcast.
Hey, John. Just so glad to be back. Continue this summer school series.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. GN, what a lot of people don't know is I didn't find out about the Portuguese version of soundtracks until your mom posted it. Like, that was very funny. Your mom was in Brazil and took a photo holding it, and then you sent me the photo, and I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, that's often how it happens. People will post in Russia or, you know, in Greece, like, hey, here's this book, and they'll tag me, and you and I will see it on Instagram, and I'll go, oh, let's go ask for that copy, and then we'll email the publisher and be like, hey, is there a Portuguese version of this book? That's fantastic. So it was so funny that your mom in Brazil posted that. It was super encouraging. It's probably one of my favorite parts about books. Now, today we're going to talk more than just about books. We're going to talk about running a business. So we've got 10 things that I've learned in the last 10 years. You and I are going to go through those one by one. You ready to start?
Can't wait.
Let's do it. So let's go through the list, Gian.
All right. The first one, John, that you talked about is when you think you've communicated clearly enough, you just have started. Can you expand on that?
And you would probably be able to speak to this too as a member of my team. Early on in business, when I had my business, I would think, okay, I said exactly what I needed to say. I've given clear directions. I've set clear expectations. And I would send an email or I'd have a phone call. And then I would realize, oh no, I didn't. The thing I said could be interpreted 100 different ways. And where I really hurt my early business years were I'd be on a call with somebody like you, or I'd be on a call with Ashley or somebody else on our team, and I would list 10 things. And I wouldn't tell you which one really mattered. I would just go, hey, here's 10 ideas. Here's 10 things we could try. And then you would come back a week later and go, Cool. So I guessed that what you really wanted me to do was number one, number two, and number nine. I'd go, oh, no, GN, I really wanted four, five, and six. And you would go, but you didn't say that you wanted four, five, and six. And so I've learned that I've got to get much better at when I write an email going, what are the questions people could ask and how do I answer them now before I send the email versus going, you know, let them figure that out. Because you waste so much time, you waste so much money. It's frustrating for you because I, you know, would give you loose ideas and have you try to guess. But that was the first one, is that I've got to communicate clearly. How have you seen that on the other side working with
me? I've seen definitely a shift in the way that you communicate with the team. You now communicate less, but with more depth, right? So we talk about a new project and you actually ask 5-6 questions about that project that we need to come back and answer instead of, hey, what do you think about just doing this project? You know, now you're giving us some clear questions to answer that will move the project forwards. I think sometimes we struggle when we're having a team meeting and you're thinking out loud and you're just running through ideas through your head. Yeah. And then we're all taking notes like, oh, John wants a third podcast ad or this and that. And we're just, you know, it becomes a to-do list right away. And we come back with that. And they're like, oh no, I was just thinking out loud about that. So you've done a much better job with that.
Yeah, but
as well.
I think that's a really good point of learning for me. I really appreciate that feedback. Because what I can do, and I think what other people can do that run businesses or run teams, is say, we're in the dreaming stage right now. Like we talk about that a lot. In, you know, there's four stages to a goal. You dream, you plan, you do, you review. So often when I don't do a good job of saying, this is dreaming, this is just dreaming. And I come in with a planning kind of tone. And then you go, hey, all right, John said these 7 things, let's go do them. And then I go, whoa, no, I was just dreaming, but I haven't told you that. So I think that's a good lesson for anybody who leads a team, that if you're just brainstorming, say that, say that, say that. If you're just dreaming, say that, say that, say that. Or your team, rightfully so, is going to run down a path and you'll go, wait, what are we talking about? That's a great example of the first one. What's the second one, Gian?
The second one is tracking data, right? And every week we review a scorecard. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So early on, we would just launch a bunch of projects and never really know which ones worked because we weren't intense about data. I'm an artist. I'm a writer. Like data is not my first thought. It's often something that I'm like, oh, I hate data. And the reason people hate data is that data tells the truth and data prevents denial, which, you know, prevents disaster. Like it's just math. And so I think over the years, we've gotten much better at having a weekly scorecard where we'll make decisions and go, like, versus just with our feelings to go, I feel like this is a good product. And you go, okay, cool. Well, the goal of the product was to make money or to help people or whatever. How many did it help? And if it helped 4 people, then you go, hey, not a good product. Nobody wanted that. We need to change that. So there's been a lot of conversations around that. But yes, we have a weekly scorecard and you'll update it via social media. We track probably 22 different points of data, and it allows us to see patterns. And then it also sets expectations for the next year, because we can go back a year and go, okay, this time last year, here's where we were. Ooh, we are way behind. Or hey, we're right where we thought we'd be. Everything's cool. I think as a small business, you sometimes don't think you have to track data because it's just a small business. But I think a small business needs to be crazy about their data. That's been a big lesson for me.
Especially that my first few team meetings, when we started tracking that data, I was like, this seems a little too much. Like we shouldn't be tracking how many selfies you take with your podcast guests, but at the same time, that helps me in my end with social media to come in and be like, hey, John just recorded a podcast with Donald Miller. Right. So then we can just post that. But I think the more I've worked with you, John, the more I've seen the data tracking is so important. So important, especially when we see trends. Hey, every April we have a lull in this metric. So now we know that every April we have that. We're not freaking out like, oh, this went down by 10%. It's like every April it goes down by 10%, or every May it goes up 10%, whatever it may be.
Yeah, you don't get better unless you track data. Let's jump into number 3.
Number three is use surveys. How have we been doing that with inside ACUF Ideas?
Yeah, I think it goes back to creating things people actually want. I often say in speeches when I talk about empathy, it's better to meet a need than it is to invent a need. Like, it's better to meet a need than invent a need. It's expensive and time consuming to invent a need. It's really fun to meet a need. And one of the ways you identify need is with surveys. So we recently just did a big survey of our entire audience and had, I think, about 1,500 participants, which was so helpful. And it showed us very quickly that some of the launches we were doing were in the wrong time of year, because we didn't understand the audience and we didn't understand their calendar. And once we understood who they were, we could go, oh, that's not helpful. That's not helpful to them for us to do all these product launches at a time where they're the busiest, or that they already feel stressed out. And we're like, what if you felt even additionally stressed? Like, what if you felt more overwhelmed? So I think that surveys for a business, for me, gets back to that, be in the trenches. You can't serve people you're not connected to. So the more we survey, and it can be a series of stories where you collect stories and go, hey, here's 10 things customers said. It can be a data survey where we say, here's the average age, here's where people live. We should do a book tour stop in Dallas. We have a lot of people that live in Dallas. Cool. Or we shouldn't do one in Omaha. We don't have a ton of, you know, people that read the books in Omaha. That's fine. But unless you're connected to the people you're serving, it's almost impossible to serve them.
Yeah, so true. I've seen, even with this most recent one, it goes back to how can we find the content that will serve the most amount of people that are listening to us. And sometimes I think we go in that dreaming phase and we start planning some products and some launches that are for the complete, for 10% of our audience, that yeah. It would be cool to launch it, but at the same time, it wouldn't meet that much need. So
It wouldn't meet the need. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, love that. The fourth one, John, that we talked about is we have a limited amount of time. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, so I use this tool that I call the time gap analysis. I teach it in the Guaranteed Goals community. And it really just makes it very clear about where your time is actually going. I think small business owners, entrepreneurs that don't make friends with their time, overcommit and over-exaggerate what they can get done, and then they burn out. Like, you always hear like entrepreneurs burning out. I think a big part of it is they try to do, you know, a 400-hour project in a 200-hour slot. And then they go, it's so weird, I'm stressed out. And so for me, I did this big time gap analysis that I ended up teaching other people. And I realized I was trying to accomplish 5 quarters of work in a year, and years only have 4 quarters in them. Like, I don't know if you know that, but like, duh. And so I was 500 hours short of what I needed. And so I was able, like, once you know that, you can then go, oh, okay, I need to tweak some things. I need to move some things around. But I think that a mistake entrepreneurs make is they think their time is bottomless, that they've got more, or they can just fix it with hustle. The idea of you're going to fix this problem with just additional hustle is one of the reasons that I think that families on the other side of entrepreneurs burn out. Like, if I lose my family and the business is successful, I haven't been successful. Like, that's not like one of my metrics is, do I have a happy, healthy marriage? Do my kids feel like I'm a present dad? So for me, I know the fix isn't just work more hours, because that has a cost. And I'm very much against this mentality of like, work 80 hours a week, work 90 hours a week. There's a lot of entrepreneurs that are like, you got to grind until your eyes bleed. You can sleep when you're dead. Like, nah, dude, that ain't it. That's not me. That's not how I'm trying to live. Like, no way.
Yeah.
I take care of my
time.
Yeah,
we talk about our imagination is bigger than our calendar, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's why the dream, plan, do, review process is so important, because on the dreaming stage, we can dream whatever we want to do. But when you get to that planning stage, you're like, ooh, I need to cut some of these dreams right now, maybe postpone them for a later season of life so that I can fit everything in.
Yeah, something needs to. Well, and the other thing is you can't be excellent at everything. So you have to let your time go. Where do you have time for excellence? Like, oh, I can't be excellent at this other thing. Okay, we either need to stop it or change how we're doing. But the time will reveal that. Time makes it real. And one of the things I say about time is it's our most valuable resource, but it's also our most vulnerable. And that we have to defend it. It can't defend itself. We are the defenders of time. Time can't defend itself. So I love that tip. What's the next one?
Number five, ask for more.
So I have that written on a note on my wall. I have post-it notes and note cards on my wall of things I want to remember. So like one says, ask for more. And I wrote it August 27th, 2020. So that's almost 3 years old. And it was a reminder for me that when I'm negotiating, I tend to naturally undervalue what I do because I enjoy it, because it's fun to me, because I'm insecure about things. And I don't want to undervalue what I do. So I think for me, negotiating, it's a great reminder of, no, you need to ask for more. You need to value what you do. If you don't value what you do, nobody you work with will. Like if you don't value your time, your energy, your effort, the products you're proud of, nobody else will. So it's a reminder for me when it comes to negotiating that I need to be deliberate about what I ask. And it needs to be fair. It needs to be reflective of the market. We don't make up numbers, obviously. We're very deliberate about pricing and whether it's, you know, something small or something large. But I know my natural tendency is to under ask. So I need to correct that by asking for more. And so I would say the real lesson there, the big lesson is you have to know your weaknesses as an entrepreneur, or you'll continue to underperform. I know one of my weaknesses. One of my weaknesses is not asking for enough money, not negotiating hard enough or, you know, to the full value of what we're able to do. And so I need a reminder. Somebody else might go, no, I love negotiating. Like buying a car is my nightmare. Like I'm terrible at that. So I know that. So I compensate for that with deliberate lessons. And so I'd say early on in my the 10 years of business, I didn't know that. And I undervalued what I did. And I had to kind of learn to correct that. That's what ask for more means.
Yeah. I just ran into that situation. My wife's birthday is coming up. And I asked one of my coworkers, whose husband is an incredible baker, who actually bakes cakes for weddings and things, you know, but just on the side as a passion project.
Yeah, sure.
And I said, my wife would love a carrot cake, you know, with some cream cheese frosting.
Yeah, totally.
And they brought the cake, you know, to me. And I said, how much is it? And it's like, no, for friends, it's free. And I was like, no, it shouldn't be free.
Yeah.
This is an art form.
Yeah.
This could potentially one day become your business. I'm going to pay you whatever you ask. And so I'm trying to teach them that lesson. It's okay to ask, even if it's for friends.
100%. Like I always say, friends should pay the most. Like your friend shouldn't try to rip you off. Like a friend should pay the full rate. Now, if you want to donate something, that's completely different, obvious. But like a friend shouldn't be the one that goes, I don't know, man, how about 80% off? Like that's not a good friend. A friend should tip the highest. They should pay the most. They should value what you do if they're your friend. So that's a principle that I could probably do a whole episode on is how to value what you actually do. That's a perfect one. So you've worked with us for a year now. What's one that you've learned in the last year of working with Acre of Ideas?
Definitely the importance of blocking our time.
How did you first learn that?
probably the first few weeks when I would text you in the morning and I wouldn't hear back, and I would just hear back from you in the afternoons, and it would be hours passed by the time I texted to the time I received a reply. And I was like, ooh, and I kept overthinking my text. I was like, is it too rude of a text? Did I use too many exclamation marks or too many question marks?
Yeah.
But no, I figured that mornings, it's your most important time. It's your most efficient time. And so if it's not an emergency, you're probably looking at that text and being like, I can reply to him later. But right now I'm writing a book. Right now I'm recording a podcast or whatever. Is that true?
Yeah, 100%. And it's blocking, you're right, blocking your high energy tasks for high energy moments. So I know I write better in the morning than I do in the afternoon. So I block that time. Where I could do better is tell you that. Like the fix to that is going forward, I shouldn't make you guess after 5 weeks of being like, man, is he mad? That's a fail on my part. But I look at that and go, okay. Like this morning I worked on a new book that I'm writing and I worked on some newsletter stuff that I'm writing. And then, you know, we started recording this in the afternoon because then it was more podcast time. So yeah, I think I'm a big believer in that same technique of how do you block time for the things that require that type of time? What's the next one on the list? What's number six?
Number six, John, is you don't have it to have it all figured out before you start.
I'm a big believer. I think that people put a lot of pressure on themselves, especially businesses like mine, small businesses, where they go, you got a micro niche. You got to have a micro niche. And you go, what does that mean? You can't just sell flowers. You have to sell a certain type of flower from Malaysia only in Beverly Hills to women named Cheryl. And you're like, what? Like, there's so many. And that puts such pressure to go, you have to know exactly what you're doing 5 years from now to start today. And I don't think that's true. I think it's much more likely. Like, the company that invented QR codes, I just spoke at an event recently. They were in the audience and I was bragging about QR codes. Thank goodness that I wasn't insulting them.
Yeah.
And it's an automotive company that they created them as a way to track parts. And then it turned into this whole thing. They didn't say, we're going to develop a technology that every company in the world uses. I think often if you get so locked in at the beginning, you miss new opportunities along the way. So back to that idea of tracking time and being deliberate about time, I try to leave 10 to 15% of my schedule open and free because that's when new opportunities come. They're unplanned because they're new. You don't see them. And if you overplan your time, you don't have any room for something new to show up. But yeah, I don't think you have to have the whole thing figured out before you take the first step.
Yeah. And I even think inside ACUF Ideas, we have the mentality of, hey, this looks like it's a great content or a great project. We can start working on it right now. We don't have to know what the end result it's ultimately going to look like. You know, we have to have some measurements. We have to have some data that says
framework.
This is actually framework. Yeah. But we do take some steps, and we've taken steps on projects and then we canceled them. You know, we just said, no, this is not going to be worth our time. But there's so many others that if we hadn't taken those first few steps, by the time it was time to actually implement those, we would be behind schedule and would have missed out on that window of opportunity.
That is a great example. That's 100% what we've seen over and over and over again, especially with a small business. Which brings me, like, that's kind of related to the next one.
I feel like the next one is the importance of pivoting, right? How does that apply to our lives here at ACUF Ideas?
Well, I think everyone listening to this hates that word now. I'm sorry we have to use it, but it's just a great word. Like, we all heard it a billion times in 2020 and 2021, but it's true. When you have a small business, you have to be nimble and flexible. Like, a rigid small business breaks. It becomes brittle. An example of that for us is 2020 was the biggest, you know, amount of speaking events we'd ever had scheduled, and all of them got canceled. So there was no pivoting, wasn't even an option. It was like, do you want to survive or not survive? And it was like, I do want to survive. Okay, well then guess what? You better pivot. And we did. And we had great partners like Immutable and Caleb and Jessica that helped us go, we can figure out online courses. We can figure out online challenges. Like, that was gigantic to have them help us do that. But I think that's part of the challenge is you're constantly going, okay, what's the next thing? What's around this corner? What do I need to do now to get ahead of that? How do I respond to this thing that was unexpected? Because I think if you don't, you end up saying that's not how we do things here. And that's a phrase that I think we try to avoid at all costs. And it's so easy. I'll get stuck. You guys do a great job of helping me get unstuck. Like, an example of that would be, I'm a Microsoft Word document guy, and you guys have slowly been like, there's this thing called Google Docs. It's going to blow your mind. We can all see it. We can all share it. We can edit it live. And it's not just on your computer, John. We all have access to it. So I get stuck sometimes, and I think having a team go, hey, wait a second. No, there's a better way to do it. Helps me pivot. I love that one.
Number eight, John, is fight for community. Why is it important for us as we're starting a business to have community?
Well, I just think running a business can be really lonely, especially if you know, when you start it, if you're the only one working on it and it's a one person, one man, one woman show, I think it can be really a really lonely endeavor. So for the first couple of years when I had my business, I was in a mastermind. It was me, this guy, Kyle Chowning, Derek Webb, who's a musician, Carlos Whitaker, and Jeremy Cowart. And we would meet every week and we would hot seat and say, okay, what are you working on? What are your wins? What are your losses this week? And that was invaluable because it was the joke I always do is like, you know, you're lonely when you start over talking the UPS guy. Like when the UPS guy is dropping off something, you're like, hey, how's the family? How are the kids? And he's like, dude, I just want to leave this box. Like, that's my whole relationship. Yeah, I can't talk to you. And so you have to find other ways to have community when you run your own business, or it gets really isolating really quickly.
Yeah, I think that goes for any type of goal as well, right? In my personal experience, during the pandemic, I decided to write a book and start a podcast. And I had a former teammate of mine that was doing the same thing separately. And then we just met at one point and we told each other what we were planning. And they're like, oh, you're doing it together. So now we can meet, talk weekly, semi-weekly, and grow through this process together. And it ended up becoming the best thing that we could have done, to just bounce off ideas of each other, support each other. That's why I love the GGC as well.
Oh, yeah. There's real community in there where people are encouraging each other. I think it's vital. What's we got two left. What's the
number
next one?
Nine? Yeah, number nine. Don't judge your success by someone else's metrics.
Yeah, I think we have to look at our own season of life and our own goals. For me, what that looks like is I've talked about this before. I'll occasionally get really jealous of like a 31-year-old single man who lives in Los Angeles by himself. Like, I'll be like, man, look at what he's building. And like, we don't have the same life. We have a different life.
Look at that minimalistic apartment.
Yeah, exactly. Like, look at that. I'm like, that's not my life. And so if I judge my life by somebody else's metrics, I'm instantly a failure because it's not my scorecard. It's their scorecard. And what they're doing works for them. And I need to do what works for me. I sometimes say that, we've always struggled with the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. It's just now with social media, we have access to 100 million backyards. We can see everybody's backyard. And it's so easy, especially when you're growing a business and it can be challenging and stressful to look at somebody. Like, the joke I sometimes do is like, you shouldn't compare yourself to Gary Vee. Like, you really shouldn't. He has like 800 staff members. You would never drive down the street and see an 8-story building that has 100 people on each floor and go, oh, that building is crushing me right now. Why am I underperforming against that building? Like, you would never go, like, I never drive past a business complex and go, I just got to try to keep up with that. I got it. Like, no, but sometimes we forget that that metric isn't what I should measure my life by. So I've learned, and it's something I practice daily, is that I've got to focus on our goals as a company. Because if I get distracted by somebody else's, I chase stuff that's not meant for us and it ends up going sideways so fast.
Yeah, so true. So true. Number 10, lesson number 10 that you've learned from owning your business for 10 years now, John. It's a soundtrack a little bit. It's excellence always takes time and there is no free money.
Yeah, this one, I have to learn this one daily. This is another one of those daily lessons, because what happens is people will come up to you and go, man, did you hear about Mike? Or did you hear about, Samantha? She has a huge audience. She makes $1 million a month in passive income. It's not that hard. And you go, what? No, it must be very hard. Like, it's very – so the problem is, in small business, people talk about the results, not the work. So they under-talk the work and they over-talk the results. So they go, dude, took 2 seconds. He's killing it. He's making $1 million in passive income. And they never stop to go, how long did that take him? What does that mean? No, that has to be very difficult. So that's what I mean. Like, excellence always takes time and there's no free money. Whenever somebody tells me you're leaving money on the table, I know they're about to sell me something that I probably don't need to buy. Like, John, it's just like free money. You're already like, it's free money. You're leaving money on the table. And like, maybe I'm not supposed to pick up that money. Maybe that money is going to be really distracting. Maybe that money comes with a cost. So there's a couple trigger phrases when people try to sell me stuff and they go, John, it'll take barely any of your time. I go, no. Don't say that. It always takes a lot of my time. Like, excellence takes time. There's no like if somebody says we want to turn this into that, and John, you'll barely have to be involved. I don't believe that anymore, because if I want it to be excellent, I'm going to have to spend some time on it. And I think you're selling me something, and I don't believe that anymore. So now when somebody pitches me, I'm like, oh, okay, sure. So those were the 10. I bet there's one last one you've learned in working with us in the last year. What's the last thing you'd add?
Yes. I was just amazed by how much as a team we can get done in 1 hour of meeting together a week. we only have, you know, it's a team. Now we have about 7-8 people, John, that work for Acuff Ideas. But we only meet once a week for 1 hour, and we get so much done. I'm just amazed. Every Wednesday when we meet, it's incredible because everyone is prepared. It's not like we're just showing up to the meeting to find out what's about to happen. Everybody has expectations, and we're just so effective and efficient during that time that we come out of that meeting knowing exactly what we need to do for the next week until we meet again.
Yeah, I think that's a real team effort. And I think it goes back to having, you know, a COO like Aaron that runs the meeting. It comes back to having a format like the L10, which is an EOS product. And it's just nobody likes meetings. Nobody likes wasteful meetings. I love the interaction we have, but nobody likes a wasteful meeting. And we've all worked at companies where you're like, the joke is always, this is a meeting that could have been an email. And you're like, yep. I don't need to. So we try to like, I want us to be hyper efficient. And so, yeah, we do a lot in an hour because it's just better that way. And they, you know, I've worked with at companies that they've done great at that, where it's a stand up meeting because they know if you're standing up, it'll be short. And so there's no chairs in the room. You're like, all right, I got to stand up. So, yeah, I think that's a product of the team working really hard. And then all of us being like, yeah, let's not have a ton of meetings. I loved getting to share those ideas. This series has been super fun already. I think we've got a couple more episodes that people are going to love. Gian, thanks for shotgunning this one with me. I appreciate you riding shotgun. That was a blast. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode. We'll include links in the show notes as always. Thank you for reviewing the podcast. Super encouraging. Please make sure you follow or subscribe or whatever the kids are saying these days. We'll be back next Monday with another episode. And remember, all it takes is a goal.
Thanks for listening. To learn more about the All It Takes Is a Goal podcast and to get access to today's show notes and exclusive content from John Acuff, visit acuff.me/podcast. Thanks again for joining us. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode of the All It Takes Is a Goal podcast.